Good evening and welcome to our new series called The Amazing Race. The title for our series really borrows its name from a reality show that debuted back in 2001, a reality show that documents the adventures of 11 two-person teams who race around the world. And over the course of this race, these teams have to navigate through 12 foreign countries, interact with the locals, and then perform various physical and mental challenges. Now, in advance of the race, the producers have provided each team with a long list of countries that may be a part of the race. But on the day that the race begins, these teams don't know which 12 countries they'll be traveling to, nor do they know what challenges they're going to face in those countries. And if you've ever watched the show, you know that the travel and the challenges leave these teams totally spent and exhausted. Yet no matter where the race ends up for each team, when they reflect upon the race that they've run, their comments can always be summed up with these words: "This has been an amazing race." Now, just as the producers of this show mark out amazing race for these teams to run, we know that the Lord has marked out for us an even more amazing race for us to run. There is a key scripture in Hebrews 12:1, and I'm going to read it out of the New Living Translation. It says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge cloud of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up, and let us run with endurance the race God has set before us." In yet another translation, it says we are to run with perseverance the race God has marked out for us. You see, there is a race that God has marked out for us. It is a race that will require endurance, perseverance. It'll be a race filled with challenges, mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual challenges. But when we commit ourselves to run the race that God has marked out for us, instead of trying to run our own race, we will be amazed where God takes us. And we will be amazed at what God does for us and with us and through us. So we know, looking at the scriptures, that God has marked out for us a race to run, an amazing race. But our races are not identical. They are not going to be exactly the same. But what is the same about everyone's race is that God doesn't give us all the details up front, the details of the race we are to run. And often this is where we struggle. I know this is often where I struggle, because I'm the kind of person who wants to know the details. I want to know God's plan for my life. I would like a detailed map to follow. I'd like to know what's around the corner and where it's all leading to. You know, there's an old song that was written by Steve Green, and the chorus goes like this: "I don't need to have a plan in hand. I don't need to have the end in sight. All I need to do is follow you wherever you lead and do what you ask me to." Now, the lyrics of that song are easy to sing. I mean, they really just roll off your tongue. But the message is much harder to live, because we want to have the plan in hand. We want the plan with details, and we want to have the end in sight and know where God is leading us to in this life and how he's getting us there. But you don't have to be a Bible scholar to know that that isn't the way that God works. And there is a reason clearly evident when we look at God's relationship with a man named Abraham. You know, in the book of Genesis, we read where God meets Abraham. Abraham has this encounter with the living God. And in this meeting, God speaks to Abraham about these wonderful promised blessings. God promises to bless Abraham, that he would bless those who blessed him, and he would curse those who cursed Abraham, that he would make Abraham's name great, and from him would come a great nation, and through him all the nations of the earth would be blessed. But all of these blessings were contingent upon one thing. Abraham would have to leave his homeland. He would have to leave his home country and go to the land that God would show him. Now, after this meeting, the Bible doesn't give us the exact details of what Abraham did or how he shared the news with Sarah. But I imagine as he burst through that door, there was such a joy and excitement upon his face that Sarah was truly amazed. I can just see Abraham going from room to room trying to decide what to take and what to leave behind. And here's Sarah trying to keep up with him, trying to understand what in the world was happening to her husband, what had happened to him, because she had never seen such joy and excitement on his face. But at some point, Abraham must have turned to her and said, "Sarah, I met the living God, the Almighty God today, and he has promised us great blessings, unbelievable blessings. But Sarah, the most incredible blessed promise is that from us would come a great nation." Do you know what that means, Sarah? It means that God is promising that we will have a son. Well, this was the one thing that Sarah had longed for. You see, she was barren, and for too many years she had lived with the stigma of her barrenness. And remember, in her culture, a woman's worth was based on her ability to bear a son, an heir for her husband. So no matter what joys of life she experienced, they were always dampened by that desire to have a son. And I think Sarah must have been the one now so excited that she started to pull clothes out of the drawer and emptying the closets. I think she was the one that called the realtor and scheduled the yard sale because, you see, she wanted a child. Yet in the midst of all this excitement, at some point she must have asked Abraham this question. "Okay, Abraham, I'm willing to leave. I'm willing to go. You said that God said we have to go and leave this country for all these blessings to come to pass, and we have to go to the land that he's going to show, that he'll show you. So tell me, Abraham, what land did he show you? Where are we going?" And I think Abraham must have hesitated a bit and said, "Well, he said he would show me." And Sarah's reaction must have been, "You got to be kidding. We're leaving and we don't know exactly where we're going?" Imagine your reaction to that plan. You see, God knew where he was taking Abraham and Sarah. He had the plan in his hand, a very detailed plan. It wasn't as if God was making this up as they went along. God could have easily said to Abraham, "Leave your homeland and go to the land of Canaan." God knew where he was going to take Abraham and Sarah. So why didn't he give them the details up front? Why not tell them exactly where they were going? Why didn't he put that detailed plan in their hand? And why not tell them that it would be years before their miracle son Isaac would be born? It was an amazing race that God had marked out for Abraham and Sarah, so why not give them the details up front? Because you see, from the very beginning of their relationship with God, he was teaching them that they would need to rely upon him for guidance, that they were to allow him to direct their steps, so that they wouldn't rely on the plan, but instead they would rely on God, the plan maker. You see, Abraham and Sarah learned that what they needed to do was to engage in their relationship with God in the present, to continually draw upon God for guidance in each step of the way, to be obedient to where God is leading in the present, as God would take them to their future. You know, generations later, Abraham and Sarah's great-grandson, had to learn this same lesson, but through a totally different circumstances. You see, the race that he would have to run would be quite different from that of Abraham and Sarah, but the lessons remained the same. That grandson was named Joseph, and he was the favored son of Jacob. Now, Joseph had 11 brothers, 10 of them older. But of all the sons of Jacob, Joseph definitely was the apple of his father's eye. And as a special gift to his son, he had given Joseph this beautifully embroidered, colorful coat, a special gift from Jacob. But every time Joseph wore that coat, his older brothers were reminded of Joseph's favored status. And every time Joseph was shown preferential treatment by Jacob, their resentment intensified. And then when Joseph shared with them his dreams that he had, dreams that placed him in a position of power and authority over them and even their father, their resentment soon turned to hatred. One day, Jacob sends Joseph to gather report on his brother's management of the family business, which was tending sheep. Now, apparently, this assignment was not unusual for Joseph. And at 17, instead of joining his brothers as a shepherd, you can see how he was his father's eyes and ears, yet again a sign of preferential treatment. And so Joseph travels to Dothan, where his brothers are tending the sheep, and as his brothers see him approaching, their hatred gives birth to a plan of murder. And as soon as Joseph arrives, their jealous hands strip him of that coat. They throw him into a dry cistern, and the plan is to leave him to die a slow death in this wilderness pit with no way of escape. So here Joseph is in this pit, totally bewildered and confused, desperately crying out to his brothers to take him out of this pit, but they refuse to relent. So here he is in this pit, filled with despair, realizing just how much his brothers hated him. That evening, his brothers sat down to eat their meal, and in the distance, they see a caravan of Midianite traders coming their way. And suddenly they have a slight change of heart, and they alter their plan. Instead of death, they would sell Joseph to the Midianites, who in turn would sell him into Egyptian slavery. So spared from death, now Joseph faces an uncertain future as a slave. And as Joseph is placed in shackles, abandoned and betrayed by his own brothers, with every step that brought him closer to Egypt, he is overcome with fear and great despair. Everything and everyone he knows and loves is gone. Gone is the hope of ever again basking in his father's love. What emotions must have been coursing through him as he stood on that auction block and listened to his life being sold to a man in a land that was both foreign in language and culture. Every thought must have screamed, God, this isn't supposed to be the plan for my life. This isn't how I thought the plan of my life would be played out, but it was God's plan. Like Abraham and Sarah, Joseph just didn't know the details of the plan. He didn't see the end in sight, because in that moment, Joseph didn't realize that God was going to use his slavery years to teach him what he needed to learn in order for God to use him as part of God's greater plan. Like his great-grandparents, Joseph would have to learn to be obedient in the present as God would lead him to his future. He would have to learn to be obedient in the present, even when the present wasn't where he wanted to be. Joseph is sold to Potiphar, an Egyptian captain of Pharaoh's palace guard. As a slave, Joseph was severed from the love and favor of his father Jacob, but he was not severed from the love and favor of his heavenly father. Whatever Joseph put his hand to was blessed. Whatever task he was assigned went well. God's favor was upon Joseph, and it was so apparent that God's favor was upon Joseph that even an idol worshiper like Potiphar recognized it and advanced Joseph to a position as his personal assistant. So when it came to bills being paid and investments being made and the business affairs being managed, the Bible tells us that all aspects of Potiphar's household administration or business was carried out by Joseph. In fact, it says that Potiphar had no concerns about anything except the food that he ate. So here is Joseph. He isn't living in the land of his choice. He isn't with the people that he loves. Yet whatever task he is assigned to, he meets it with energy and excellence, with no hint of resentment or bitterness. Joseph had been horribly wronged, but he didn't let the wrong permeate his spirit. Did you catch that? He was horribly wronged. What had been done to Joseph was truly unfair, but he didn't let the wrong, the unfairness of the situation, permeate his spirit. He didn't allow the wrong of the present to make him bitter or resentful or become offended at God. While he is in Potiphar's house, as Potiphar's household manager, Joseph gained knowledge and skill in finance and in business management that he would never have gained as a shepherd in Canaan. Joseph recognized God's favor is upon him, even though he wasn't in the place he wanted to be. What he didn't recognize was that everything he was learning in Potiphar's house was an important and necessary detail in the next step of God's plan for his life. What he was learning in this leg of the race was necessary in order for him to be able to run successfully the next leg of the race that God had marked out for him. See, the end of God's full plan for Joseph was still not in Joseph's sight. In fact, it was impossible for Joseph to see where God was ultimately leading him, especially when you consider how his time at Potiphar's house came to such an abrupt and disheartening end. See, in Potiphar's house, Joseph had achieved a level of security and comfort. He had adjusted to his status as favored servant. And overall, things were going well, with one exception: the repeated advances by Potiphar's wife. Frustrated by her failed attempts to seduce Joseph, one day she turned on him with false accusation. And believing her lies, Potiphar throws Joseph into the palace prison. So now Joseph isn't just a servant slave. He is now a prisoner and once again facing a very uncertain future. Surely Joseph had to cry out to God in bewilderment, saying, "I didn't do anything wrong. I did everything right, yet I end up in prison. God, how can this be part of your plan? How can this be part of the race that you've marked out for me?" Joseph may have been bewildered by his circumstances. He may have cried out, questioning God, but his faith in God never wavered. His awareness that God was with him never waned, because even in prison, God's favor was evident. Look what it says in Genesis 39, 21 to 23. "But the Lord was with Joseph in the prison and showed him his faithful love. and the Lord made Joseph a favorite with the prison warden. Before long, the warden put Joseph in charge of all other prisoners and over everything that happened in the prison. The warden had no worries because Joseph took care of everything. The Lord was with him and caused everything he did to succeed. In Potiphar's house, Joseph had learned how to administer household affairs. And now in prison, Joseph was learning how to administer the business affairs of an entire institution. He had to manage budgets and schedules and even the inmates himself. Although a prisoner himself, Joseph embraced the opportunity to be productive and to expand his knowledge and abilities just as he had done in Potiphar's house. You see, no matter how difficult or discouraging his present circumstances, his attitude always remained positive, his work ethic never diminished, and he never allowed the wrong, the disappointment, the injustice, the unfairness of his present situation to permeate his spirit and affect how he was running the race, his race that God had marked out for him. You see, in prison, Joseph gained a greater confidence in his business management skill. But it is also in prison where he matured spiritually, where his gift to interpret dreams was fine-tuned. We read that while Joseph is in prison, due to Pharaoh's displeasure, the Pharaoh's baker and cupbearer were sent to the palace prison. And on the same night, both men had a perplexing and worrisome dreams. The following morning, as Joseph carried out his administrative duties, he noticed that something was wrong. Something was causing these men deep distress. So without hesitation, as he inquired what was going on, they shared with him their unsettling dreams. And as they did, God gave Joseph the interpretations. 3 days later, these interpretations proved true. The baker was executed while the cupbearer was released and returned to the service of Pharaoh. And as the cupbearer left prison out of gratitude to Joseph, he promises that he will plead his case before Pharaoh. So here you have two dreams that have been divinely interpreted. How Joseph's faith in God must have been strengthened. And surely he had to believe that his deliverance from prison was sure to come. It was just around the corner. An imminent deliverance from prison surely would be the result of these miraculous interpretation of the dreams, of these dreams. But Joseph's release was not the next detail in God's plan. As soon as the cupbearer is reinstated, he forgets all about Joseph. He forgets the man who interpreted his dream. And there's no release, and there's no pardon. Certainly Joseph could have thrown up his hands in despair, saying to the Lord, "Why did you give me the interpretation of these dreams if they aren't going to change my situation? If the interpretation of these dreams, this miracle of interpretations, if they aren't somehow going to secure my release from prison, change my present situation." But we read of no record of Joseph's complaint or disillusionment. We read where he doesn't ask questions of God. There's no change in his attitude or work ethic, no change in his commitment to the Lord. You see, even though Joseph didn't understand why he was still in prison, even though he saw no end in sight to being in prison, he continued to put his faith in God. He believed that even being in prison, in a place he didn't want to be, was somehow, some way, a necessary part of God's plan for his life. It was indeed part of the race that God had marked out for him. 13 years have passed since Joseph was sold into slavery. 2 years pass since Joseph has interpreted the cupbearer's dream, when Pharaoh himself had two disturbing dreams. None of his magicians or wise men could decipher them, and it's now that the cupbearer remembered Joseph. Finally, he tells Pharaoh of Joseph's gift to interpret dreams. And so with great urgency, Pharaoh sends for Joseph. And as Joseph stands before Pharaoh, he says, "It is beyond my power to do this, but God can tell you what it means and put you at ease." And that is exactly what God did. God gave Joseph the interpretation of these two dreams, one foretelling 7 years of prosperity, the other foretelling 7 following years of famine. Then, inspired by God, Joseph outlines an economic plan of how to use the years of prosperity to survive and prosper during the years of famine. Pharaoh is so impressed with Joseph and his plan that he makes this amazing decree. And we read it in Genesis 41, 37 through 40. Can we find anyone else like this man, so obviously filled with the Spirit of God? Then he said to Joseph, "Since God has revealed the meaning of these dreams to you, clearly no one else is as intelligent or wise as you are. You will be in charge of my court, and all my people will take orders from you. Only I, sitting on my throne, will have a rank higher than yours." In a matter of one day, Joseph was elevated from a prisoner to second in command over the land of Egypt. Joseph met the challenge of this enormous task with great success. So where did Joseph get the confidence to interpret Pharaoh's dreams without fear or hesitation? It came from his experience of having divinely inspired dreams as a team. It came from his experience in prison, interpreting the dreams of the Pharaoh's baker and cupbearer. And where did Joseph gain the knowledge and the skill to manage the economic affairs of Egypt, to be able to execute this economic plan? It came from his experience as a slave, managing the affairs in Potiphar's house, and as a prisoner, administering the affairs of the palace prison. And as a slave and then a prisoner, Joseph acquired the necessary skills and knowledge that prepared him to become the governor of Egypt. You see, it was during these difficult years that he learned to turn to God for strength and wisdom. He learned the necessity of engaging in his relationship with God. You see, those years as a slave and as a prisoner were a necessary part of God's ultimate plan for Joseph's life. For 22 years after being sold into slavery, there was a day where Joseph's teenage dream came to pass. Remember that dream of being in a position of authority over his brothers? It became a reality. You see, the 7 years of prosperous harvest had come and gone, not only in Egypt, but now the whole region was in the throes of a great famine. And Canaan, where Joseph's family lived, was no exception. And hearing that Egypt had food supplies for sale, Joseph's brothers traveled there. And as they bowed before Joseph with their request, God revealed to Joseph the end of his plan. In that moment, all the pieces came together, all the whys were answered. You see, as Joseph revealed his identity to his brothers, dismissing any fear of retribution, he declares this in Genesis 45, verses 5 through 8. "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into slavery in Egypt. But don't be upset and angry with yourselves for selling me to this place. It was God who sent me here ahead of you to preserve your lives. He is the one who made me advisor to Pharaoh, manager of his entire palace, and governor over all Egypt." Then it says in verse 20 of chapter 50, "You intended harm, but God intended it all for good. He brought me to this position so I could save the lives of many people. See, decades earlier, God had promised Abraham and Sarah that their descendants would become a great nation. And God's plan for Joseph's life, a plan that saved his family from a devastating famine, was a necessary part of that promise to be fulfilled. The descendants of Joseph and his 11 brothers would become the promised nation of Israel, and it would be from that nation that our Savior Jesus Christ would be born. You see, the plan for Joseph's life was a necessary detail in fulfilling God's greatest plan, the salvation for all mankind. You know, several years ago, I came across a story about a girl named Brenda who had been invited to go rock climbing. And although it wasn't her sport of choice, she agreed to go along. And as she gazed at the tremendous granite cliff, she wondered whether or not she had agreed too hastily. But nevertheless, she put on her gear and took hold of the rope and started up the face of the rock. Breathing heavily, she came to the ledge of the rock and decided to take a breather. And as she moved to position herself a bit better, the safety rope snapped against her eye and knocked out a contact lens. Precariously perched on a rock ledge, groping with her hands, Brenda is searching with her one good eye, trying to locate that missing contact. So without this contact, her vision as well as her balance is impaired. And so she's a bit desperate and now upset, not knowing quite what to do, she began to pray. She said, "Lord, the Bible says that your eyes run to and fro throughout the whole earth. Lord, you can see the mountains and every stone and every crook and every cranny. You know where my contact is. Please help me." As she contemplated her next move, a new party of climbers were making their way up the face of the cliff. And as they moved closer, one called out and said, "Hey, did anybody lose a contact lens?" Brenda's contact lens had been found, but there was more to this startling answer to her prayer. The climber who had found the contact lens said he was able to spot it because something unusual had caught his sight. It was an ant slowly moving across the face of the rock carrying her contact lens. Well, when Brenda got home and shared what had happened with her father, who happened to be a cartoonist, how God had used this ant to answer her prayer, he drew a picture of a small ant lugging this oversized contact up a cliff. Then he drew a blurb with these words coming out from the ant. And the words were these: "Lord, I don't know why you want me to carry this thing. I can't eat it, I can't use it, and it's awfully heavy. But if this is what you want me to do, I'll do it for you." You see, like Joseph, that ant didn't know that his actions were part of a greater plan. He would never know that he was the means that God used to answer someone else's prayer. See, God has an amazing race marked out for us. Yet like that ant, there will be times when we won't understand all the twists and the turns of the race that he has marked out for us. Sometimes where God leads us makes us feel like we are in a Potiphar's house or in a palace prison. And we can find ourselves wondering why we are in this situation. Why is this such, you know, why are we facing such a difficult situation, a bewildering situation? Or why am I being treated so unfairly? Or why am I in a situation I never thought I would be? And we can begin to wonder and question, "Lord, how can this be part of your plan? How can this be part of the race that you have marked out for me?" And this is when we need to apply the lessons of Joseph. First of all, not to let the wrong that we are experiencing in the present permeate our spirit so that we are tempted to change our course or drop out of the race. We need to learn the lesson of Joseph, who while he was in the midst of the most difficult situations, when everything seemed to be going wrong while he was doing everything right, Joseph was a man who engaged in his relationship with God. And so we too need to engage in our relationship with God and ask Him, Lord, what do I need to learn through this present situation? What talents and abilities do I need to develop and hone now? What do I need to learn spiritually? Where are you expanding my comfort zone? Where does my confidence need to be strengthened? What do you need me to do now, Lord? What do I need to learn now in the present so I am prepared for what you have marked out for me in the future? You see, we need to be able to truly sing those words that Steve Green penned so long ago. Lord, I want to be able to declare and embrace those words where I say, Lord, I don't need to have the plan in my hand. I don't need to have the end in sight. All I need to do is follow you wherever you lead and do what you ask me to do. To do what you want me to do in the present. You see, whether Joseph was in Potiphar's house or in the palace prison, he engaged in that relationship with the Lord. He was able to continue to run that race because Joseph recognized above all that God's favor was still upon him, that God still loved him. Perhaps that's the greatest lesson to learn from Joseph, that no matter what we encounter in the race that God has marked out for us, even when it seems so discouraging and it seems like surely this couldn't be what God has marked out for me, that to know that God still loves us, that God's favor is still upon us. You see, what we need to ask God to do in those most difficult times is to say, Lord, show me signs of your grace and your favor. Let me begin to see what you want me to learn from this present situation as you lead me to my amazing future.